essential construction, cleaning, repairs, and maintenance services for houses, apartments, offices, universities, restaurants, warehouses, and supermarkets. FNBC Construction and Cleaning, 917-686-0283. 917-686-0283 or fnbccorp.com. The Catskill Revitalization Corporation, home of the Catskill Scenic Trail, along the old rail bed from Roxbury to Bloomville. With its wide path, gentle grade, and durable surface, the Catskill Scenic Trail is designed for year-round outdoor recreation. Hiking, biking, running, horseback riding, and during snow season, snowshoeing and cross-country skiing. Details at CatskillsScenicTrail.org.
This is Dan O'Connell, host of Monday Morning Music on WIOX Roxbury. As a WIOX spokesperson, I also manage underwriting for the station, and I'm here to let you know that underwriting on WIOX is a great way to support the station and inform the community about your business or service. If you'd like to become an underwriter, contact me for details at 607-326-3900 or WIOX at WIOXradio.org.
Listening to WIOX Community Radio live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi and everywhere at WIOXradio.org on computers or smartphones. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan.
What have you been up to?
I've been working on my house.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a little project going on downstairs. But I went for a walk, recently, checking out tracks in the snow, finding all the rabbits underneath the rose bushes out there.
Yeah, multi-flora, you mean?
Multi-flora roses.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're seeking cover.
We'll see. This weekend, Monday, maybe. We'll see. I might tap trees. Maple sugaring. Looks like the forecast is, the extended forecast for at least a week is looking in the 40s where I am.
I saw that.
It should be good.
Some nights that aren't even going to freeze.
That's right. Yep. So, you know, we got 1 week of winter so far under our belts.
Is that going to be it?
I don't know. Maybe. We're getting into February here, you know. Days are getting a little longer. That sun's feeling a little more intense.
Yeah.
You know. And people still manage to complain about winter.
Yeah.
God. Right?
Yeah.
They complain when it's warm, they complain when it's cold.
It's just not that bad.
That's just not that bad.
That's my next article I'm reading.
It's just not that bad?
It's just not that bad. That's how I open it. I talk about the weather and then talk about how it's just not that bad. And then I move into some invasive species we have out there. Some aren't that bad.
Some aren't that bad either.
No.
That's my article.
Most.
I might write about the invasive shrubs out there. Some aren't that bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People need to calm down.
Yeah.
You know, stop being hysterical. You know. You know, there used to be a sign in my parents' house that said, "Kindly control yourself," and that's a good one. Let's go back to that. Kindly control yourself.
Yeah.
Just calm down. All right. It's just a plant. It's just multiflora rose.
Yeah.
Well, that's it can be killed if you want.
And there's a reason to someplace. Like, we find them creeping up apple trees, and that's a pain. That's unneeded, unwanted.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was getting pictures from my article first thing this morning. That's what I was doing. I was sneaking up on the rose bushes, and there's rabbits under a lot of them. I was getting pictures of the rabbits under there and pictures of the regeneration that they're allowing. Ash and sugar maple and elderberry, using them as tree shelters to sneak up above deer browse.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the trees that are going to kill them in the long run anyway. It's not like it's not going to be a forest.
Yeah,
if you're out west, they're neglectful. Their plant that signals that there's been neglect is juniper and sagebrush. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they don't burn anymore the plains like people used to do for thousands of years. And that's what they get, you know? Overgrazing, no burning, blah, blah, blah. Here, to me, that's what multiflora is. And multiflora is just a symptom of neglect and nothing else.
Sure, but it's temporary.
It's temporary, yeah. It won't be there forever.
Yeah.
Get shaded out.
Temporary.
Yeah, I got a good picture yesterday of a stand of pole-sized ash, maybe 4 to 6 inches, about 30 feet tall. And underneath it was just a dying canopy, mid-story of honeysuckle. And, you know, the honeysuckle allowed that ash to sprout and grow. It created the forest that it's in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've talked about that. Like, you know, it's just like honeysuckle, black locust, they're not there forever. They get shaded out.
Yeah.
Same as high bush blueberry does.
Yep.
You know? But that third voice is Gary Mead. Every third Wednesday we have Gary on, talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight we're talking about birch trees, right, Gary?
Birches, yes. Quite a few different varieties. And they're the ones that, you know, when we first heard about the borer coming through and the ash is leaving, it opens up the canopy, and I think, you know, the birches probably take over. And, that's basically when they clear a road, poplars and birches pop up. When they open up the landscape and then just let it go. And you know,
talking about paper birch?
What's that?
What are you talking about? Which one? There's so many different. We got to cover them.
Well, there's white birch, paper birch. White and black birch probably are the two prominent ones we have here. The paper birch, not so much.
I think white and paper are the same thing.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
All right.
Then there's gray birch, which isn't as common.
Yeah.
It's more common in Hudson Valley, but there are gray birches around in places. They're like a white birch that doesn't have papery bark.
Right.
And really triangular leaves.
Uh-huh.
You'll see them getting like weighed down by the snow. We used to call them roller coaster trees when we were little because you'd shimmy out on them after the snow and ice would weigh them down, and then during the summer they would stay that way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you kind of shimmy out on them, but you'll see those growing like gravel pits, abandoned fields,
mm-hmm.
Sides of railroad tracks.
And they don't peel like the regular birches?
No, not at all.
They have like a furrowed bark?
They look just like paper birch, really. I mean, you would mistake them. I forget with the mustache thing, right, with the branches. One has mustache goes up, one mustache goes down.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a mustache when you look at where a branch, an old branch, meets the trunk.
Yep.
I forget, though.
I just remember gray birch, it's very triangular leaves, like really, really long points on the triangle.
Yeah, where your son lives in Pine Bush, there'd be more gray birch.
Yeah.
But up on the hill there on the mountain, it'd probably be more paper birch and gray, but paper birch.
Yeah, I don't see much white birch high up in as you do black birch. Yellow birch, too. But you see them mostly. I mean, yellow birch grows up on rocks. It's a species that grows, if there's 2 inches of soil.
Yellow birch?
Yellow birch. It'll sprout, and the roots just cascade over the rock and then go into the soil on the edge of the rock.
That's a crazy tree.
It's a beautiful tree.
Yeah, there's talus slopes, you know, like where there's just rock scree on the mountains, and yellow birch will be growing on it somehow. You'll also see them growing like stilts. You see it on Pack Attack and Mountain off the trail.
Well, you know what
that's from is from, so you know, right? Fallen hemlocks.
Yeah. Or another dead tree that it sprouted on, and then it decays and it leaves the whole root system open. But then the root gets bark around it to protect it.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible tree.
I saw one last week. I should have taken a picture of it. It was growing. I did a mapping program for a landowner, and he had a waterfall. In the center of the waterfall, where it's got a little crown to it, and it doesn't stay underwater unless it's flooded, hanging way over the tip of it, as far as it could reach out, right where the water crested over the fall, was about a 1-inch diameter yellow birch growing up out of that.
Yeah, yellow birch seems like it's the... I mean, there's like two sets of birches. There's like the more forest... older forest birches, I would call them. Bigger trees, that'd be black birch and yellow birch, right?
Yeah.
And then you get the ones that just need a lot of light, don't last long. That's white birch, gray birch, and mountain paper birch.
Mm-hmm.
Which are actually... Mountain paper birch used to be considered a paper birch, but it's... Once you see it, you know it's different. But it actually, genetically now, according to the academics, is actually different.
Yeah.
But those grow up in openings, real big ones. But yellow birch, you see on the forest preserve leaning over streams all the time. Of black and yellow, it seems like, I don't know, yellow birch, it seems like it needs a little more light. That could be wrong. But you'll see it leaning over streams always.
Yeah. I'm growing on rocks.
After cuttings, black birch seems to come up really well after like a high grade or a cutting.
Dying hemlock, you'll find black birch taking over.
Well, everywhere.
The biggest birches I've ever seen were the black. I mean, they seem to, you know, grow, high in the mountains. And, I mean, some of them things are huge. I never saw a white birch that was probably more than 20 inches in diameter. And that's pretty big for a white birch.
They'll grow on tops of the mountains.
Yeah.
Well, I see. It seems like black birch grow on the... better drains.
Especially this time of year, if you're traveling around, you can see the whites up on top of the mountain ridges here and there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the black birch and the yellow birch, they kind of blend in you. They don't really stick out like the white would.
Yeah. So
they're kind of hard to, in the fall, I try to identify what's growing on a mountain by the color of the leaves. And, you know, every tree seems, well, the maples, they come, and the soft maples, red maple, they get, they're more fluorescent than the, you know, the hard maples or sugar maples. They get a really dark, they have a darker color. It's very beautiful, but it's like a darker color. There's a mountain up by New Kingston, by me. I call it Cecil's Mountain, because Cecil Sanford owned it for years and years, and there's a whole one little section of red maple that every fall, and this fall I didn't think the colors were going to come like that, but it looks like a box of Fruit Loops. That whole, just that one area, it's about maybe 10, 12 acres of right at the base of the mountain, and it's right where it kind of rolls into the bowl. And it's just amazing. I always call it the Fruit Loops color. You know, there's just all these different fluorescent colors coming out of the forest there. And this year, we didn't have that great of color this year, but that didn't let me down. It come later than usual, but it got, and it didn't last as long either. So, you know, every year is a little bit different. But the birches, most of them just turn yellow.
Yeah, yellow.
The poplars and the birches. And I mean, there's some of them, which is hard to imagine why, some tree, it doesn't matter what species. Some of them hold their leaves. Oak is more prominent than most of them, but, you know, I've seen poplars that they hold their leaves through the winter, and some of those, you know, once in a while. And you just wonder why, but, you know, and then again, you know, it depends on what's in the soil, what they're getting, and you know, because I can get cherry or birch or different logs from all different mountains, and you color the wood slightly different. I mean, the pattern of the grain is the same,
yeah.
But, you know, some cherries that I got in there, you saw them, and then when they, you know, they dry and you kiln dry them, they're almost purple. And other ones, you plane them, and they're like light in color. It depends what they pick up out of the soil. But, you know, birches are, you know, the bark is awesome. We use them a lot when, you know, we did went out in camperies and whatnot with the scouts. And, you know, we always educated the boys. You know, a lot of people peel the bark from birches. That kills it because it goes into the cambrium. The cambrium's the lifeline of the tree right underneath. And if you're pulling the bark off, it's like stripping it right down to the cambrium. And, you know,
but you can't camp out. You can't take off a few layers and it survive. It seems like it does.
Well, you could take a sharp knife and just cut the flaky stuff off.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as pulling it and peeling it, I mean, it'll peel right back to the cambrium, and that hurts a tree. But what I always told the scouts is this tree sheds its bark. Just look on the ground, and we always found plenty. I mean, go out there with a and, you know, you don't need much of it. And, you know, it's like when you get fire started with that, it's like putting kerosene on the fire. It just starts right up and, you know, pops and bangs, and it's really very...
A paper birch?
Yeah, very.
I think yellow is even better.
Well, yellow and paper, but...
You know why? Because it curls. Yeah. It lets in more air.
I was going to say it's...
Whereas the paper,
more,
yeah, you got to...
surface area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And mountain paper birch might be the best because it's kind of a mixture of the both. It curls and has blocky strands of bark. I don't know how you say that. But yeah, yellow birch is freaking awesome. Man.
And it's thinner.
Yeah, it just wants to burn.
Yep.
You know? I've gotten fires up on the mountain going after it's rained for a whole week. You know, everything's damp. Yeah. Even the balsam, like dead balsam needles, don't want to burn. That's when you know it's kind of wet.
Yeah.
But man, the yellow birch wants to burn.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, it's so thin, I don't think it absorbs water.
Yeah. Yeah. But black birch, as it gets older, it kind of looks like black cherry. Can fool you.
Yeah.
It's also known as cherry birch. And then yellow birch, as it gets older, looks identical to black cherry.
Yep.
Just
at when it's really old, it looks like an old sugar maple.
At the bowl, yeah.
But what?
Yellow birch.
Yellow birch?
When it's really old.
Huh. Yeah. It starts to gray a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, they change. I mean, beech is one of the few woods that don't get that furrowed bark.
Yeah, which is weird, you know? Like, you think the bark...
it is.
Would do something with making them tolerant to cold.
Yeah.
But then you have beech and you have paper birch, and it seems like both of them are pretty cold hardy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. One has really smooth bark, one doesn't. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what to think. You know?
But it's sawn birch in the mill, especially the black birch, is really a nice fragrance. It just puts off a real nice smell, and it smells so good you want to eat it, but it don't taste as good as it smells.
It's got no wintergreen flavor in it.
Yeah.
In the sap, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
You think it would?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it doesn't.
Yeah.
If it did, it'd be the best.
But out on, hunting and all that, you know, I'm coming by a black birch. I'll snap off a. you know, one of them tender little ends, and there's a birch flavor in that.
Yeah, it's in the inner bark.
Yeah.
It's not in the sapwood.
It's not in the sapwood, yeah.
Yeah. I used to make birch beer. You can make all the birches run a lot. You know, paper, yellow, and black. In Alaska, those poor son of guns only have paper birch and yellow birch to make sap out of, or syrup.
Yeah.
No maple. It's like 210 to 1. So, but anyway, but birch beer is pretty good. You take the twigs and make a tea and add honey or maple syrup or something, sugar, yeah, whatever. And that's birch beer. But out of all the beers, I thought that was the best one that comes from trees.
Yeah.
That and spruce.
Yeah. And
spruce,
it's really
is good.
Good for your stomach.
Yeah.
It smells good. When we were scouting, we used to, you know, cut the tender ends and, you know, take the leaves off and just chop them up. And we had a little strainer there. We'd pour hot water over it, and it made the most delightful tea. Just, and it isn't really a breakfaster. You can have it any time of the day. It's not morning, afternoon, or night. It's just really, and while you're making it, if you're making it outside, you don't notice as much as if you're making it in the house. Yeah. The whole house smells like a birch tree. And just the flavor from it.
You make chaga tea?
Yeah.
Because that comes off birches.
Yeah, black birch.
That'll grow on all
the
birches.
Well, I think of white birch. I've never found it on a white birch. There's same kind of thing that, I don't know what it's called, grows on a cherry tree. They're not good for you. So some people got really sick cutting the wrong chaga off the wrong tree.
Is that right? Yeah, I wouldn't know.
But, you know, the cherry trees have them. And, you know, the upper part of a cherry tree looks like a birch. And so, you know, if you're out collecting chaga, don't take it from a cherry because it'll make you sick. I never heard of anyone dying from it, but it does make you very, very sick. Hmm. And like eating a bad mushroom, I guess. But, you know, a chaga, I have that about every day. I powder it and I boil it up and store it in the fridge in half-gallon containers and have it with apple juice. And I keep a tea ball of it in my my water pot constantly.
Yeah, you're just not supposed to boil it, right?
What's that?
You're not supposed to boil it, though.
Well, you're
simmer it.
Well, that's
steep it. If you boil it, I always thought you killed the methyl salicylate or whatever. That's the anti-inflammatory.
Well, I've done a lot of research on it, and way like 3,000 years ago, they have a different way, and you know, as you go up to time, it changed, and you know, some people say to boil it, some say don't. So, you know, I boil some, I eat, you know, I powder some, and I just take the powder and, you know, sprinkle it on something. So, but it's I make it cold, and I make this morning mix, and I put the dried powder in there, and I have it that way. So I have it both ways. So, because when it first came out, I did a lot of research on it, and I said, geez, I did all this research, and I know so much, I don't know nothing. So there was too much information, and, you know, some said boil it, some said don't, and so.
Yeah, I've never seen anyone boil it. Although, when I used to research, it was all in books, and I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a great book called Edible Wild Plants. I can't remember the author, but, man, that's a good book.
Mm-hmm.
And she really goes into it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought, you'll get the wintergreen flavor and all that, but she claimed you would kill that anti-inflammatory.
You mean in a chaga? Or
no, it's in a birch. Birch twigs.
Right, birch twigs.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't boil it. We just pour hot water over that.
Yeah.
the chaga I boil.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
So, chaga, I boil it three times, and it turns the color of coffee. It gets really dark. And anyway, but birch is kind of a lighter color. And, you know, you really don't want to. And if you chop it up, the finer you chop it up and put it through a strainer, the more flavor you're going to get out of it. Because, it releases that that birch flavor. And white birch doesn't have that. It's only the black birch that you can get that. Yellow, I've chewed on yellow, and it doesn't taste near as flavorful as a black birch. But, sawing it for lumber, most of the birch went for veneer back in the day. And, all that birch plywood, they used to make a lot of birch. I think they probably still do, but, most birch, when they had that veneer mill in Fleischmann's, Williamson Veneer, that's about 80% what they did up there was all birch.
Yellow or black?
I think mostly black birch, but
yeah, I think so.
They would take anything come into the mill.
It just doesn't seem like the quality of yellow birch really doesn't improve till you get to the Adirondacks for some reason. It just grows better up there.
Yeah.
But they don't get black birch, so.
Yeah. Well, all the logs I ever saw at the mill always come in black. I got a couple of white birches in. The wood is a little bit lighter And they all have kind of reddish hearts, the heartwood in them. But that oxidizes it, when you make furniture and stuff out of it. When the light hits it, it turns, it oxidizes into an amber color.
Yeah.
What
is
do
there
you
any,
do?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what do you do? What's the lumber good for? What do you use it for?
Oh, you can use it for tables, chairs. I mean, it's good for... I mean, the birch bends pretty nice, and, just about anything in furniture. It's just got a nice, tight grain, and, I've never seen too much character in the birches. It's pretty straight. Those trees, they don't grow crooked and curved, and, I mean, they grow pretty straight up. Makes nice lumber.
Why do you think it's not used more, black birch?
What's that?
Yeah, why do you think black birch isn't used more? It seems like a nice wood.
Well, there's not an abundance of it like everything else.
Well, there's going to be, and there is now.
Oh, yeah, they're coming. that hole where I cleared the bank by my mill, this was, 28 years ago now, put the road in. That whole bank is birch. It's all black birch.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bad spot for them because we got on the bottom of the side of the road, they got all the old growth maples that are tall and they don't let the light over there good. So those things are growing toward the light, they're kind of, all of them are kind of curving over the road. Yeah. In the summertime, it's nice because when I did production there, I used to trim them back because the truck drivers would complain about, the branches hitting their truck and blah, blah, and whatever. So I go out and, cut some things down. And I ain't cutting them down. I'll top them. So I used to have one of my guys drive up the road, and I would be in the bucket of the loader with lob shears and, cut them out so they didn't scratch their truck. But now I let them grow over, and I notice this summer driving down the road, it's just like, it's almost like a tunnel.
Good Lord.
They're reaching. They go all the way across the road, and the ones on the lower side are getting wider too, and they're coming in. It's like driving through a tunnel. It's really pretty.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of black birch regeneration because they seed by wind, and they can go a long ways by wind. And they're shade tolerant, and the deer don't like it. Despite tasting like wintergreen, they must not like wintergreen.
Huh? I guess not.
No. They don't eat them.
Yeah.
Not nearly as much as other trees.
Yeah.
So, the whole forest preserve is, a lot of sections are becoming black birch. Unfortunately, a lot of hemlocks are dying where I camp each year, and I've seen it over the last since 2004, go to Black Birch. It's a, some of these streams are really pain in the butt now. You can't even navigate around them. You can't see the waterfall. Hemlocks are dying all over the place. And a lot of Black Birch are just growing up.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they're going to probably take over where the ashes were. I mean, you could see in the summertime, you know, the, where the ashes were in the mountains, the big mountains, because it's just gray. It looks like this time of year, but
yeah,
there's that's too bad to see them go. But it's still, they're still, you know, growing and sprouting, and you know, I see a lot of young ash trees. And New Kingston, I, you know, they logged off Lansy's up there, and that's going to open up to, they took all the ash out of there, and that was most prominently, you know, ash and hard maple, and, you know, I'm sure the birches are going to start popping up there now. And, you know, I'm at half a mile from that property, and the ash trees, actually the ash trees at the mill, none of them got down there. I know up along South Side, a lot of them got it, but.
What, Emerald Ash Borer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess they're all going to get it after a while, but I'm only going to cut them when, you know, they get the disease. I'm not taking them before. And ash makes good firewood. It burns up a little fast, but it's good for when the fire gets low.
Yeah.
Put that in, that right. And birch, especially the white birch and yellow birch.
All right. It's a little overrated, but it's good.
What?
Ash. I'm too snobby for ash now.
Well,
I'm phasing out too.
They're messy. Yeah. They get messy too underneath the pile.
Yeah.
I'm bringing it into the house is messier.
Yeah. Shagbark hickory's messy. That's another one that's very messy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very messy.
I've been in my section I'm burning right now. I just got into nice red maple with no bark on it. I don't have to clean up a thing when I bring it into the house.
Yeah, that's nice. You just peel them off outside.
Yeah. If you let them sit a year, the rounds, and then it just peels off.
You do, it's nice.
Falls
nothing
off.
Beats out red oak, though. I don't care what anyone says.
I know.
It's not messy. It's easy, the easiest to split. It's just nice wood.
I thought you liked beech.
I don't have much beech. Beech is good.
Yeah.
But beech can get knotty because of the disease, too.
Yeah.
It can be hard to split sometimes.
Oh, most of the time.
But red oak is almost never hard to split.
Oh, I know.
It's insane.
Yeah. Just tap it.
Yeah.
Oh, ash is pretty easy splitting.
No, it's not.
Oh, it is for me.
Well, if you get a straight saw log quality, it's fine.
Right.
But any kind of branch, man, it gets cranky right away.
Well, red oak, you can't split where the branch come out, but you can split on the opposite side of it.
It can split, yeah, right. But you can split almost anywhere. Because, you know, it's ring porous. It just wants, so is ash. But ash gets... Don't you think so? I mean, I split by hand.
I agree with you.
So, yeah, any kind of, like,
I'll take
any kind of branch and ash, it'll split and then stop. And you're like, son of a bee. Now I got to redo it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you get take what you get sometimes, right? You know, you do a tree job or there's, you know, someone cut a tree down on the side of the road and you're a wood pirate for the day.
Yeah.
Take what you get, right?
But that's it. And it all makes heat.
Black birch and yellow birch are good firewood.
Yellow?
Both of them.
Yeah.
Black birch, I think, is even better.
Yeah.
I think just because the bark is tight. I don't know. White birch is like, it burns too hot and fast, but the problem is it rots if you don't cover it.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's the problem I had with it. I thought I was going to use it for sapwood one year, and I didn't cover it that great. And
it's punky out on you?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. Once it gets punky, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it hardly burns, like trying to burn a wet sponge.
Yeah. But the only one that is kind of a rare birch would be mountain paper birch. So the next time you're up on a mountain and you see like a copper-hued paper birch, it's probably mountain paper birch. I think it's Betula cordiformis or something
like that. It's really dark, right?
It's not that dark. It's like it looks just like paper birch, except for the bark is more like coppery purple, reddish hue.
If you would maybe mix a river birch with a,
I have
with
one,
a white birch, that's the mountain paper birch.
Yeah, like river birch, yeah.
Well, I have
Well, that's another birch we didn't talk about. When you go to Kingston,
yeah,
up on the down on the Esopus is river birch naturally growing.
Uh-huh.
Forgot about that one.
Because I have a birch, you know, I got about by the kiln. And these were there after they cut the right-of-way, NYSEC cut a right-of-way to put my electric in. And, you know, they're probably 6-7 inch diameter. You know, there's white, yellow, and I thought it was black, but it turned purple. And it just like, it don't look like any other birch I ever familiar with. Yeah. But I know it's a birch. And that might be the mountain birch that grew in there.
I'd be surprised to see it down below. I mean, I've never seen it down below. I'm not going to say it can't happen.
Next time you're at the mill, I got to show it to you.
I'll look at it.
Because it doesn't look like anything, any other, I know it's a birch, but it don't look.
Yeah, so I guess if it has papery bark and the leaves are triangular looking, like a gray, it could be mountain paper birch. I guess that's the easiest way for.
Well, I'll look at the leaves this year.
Yeah.
And if they're oval, then it's not.
It's probably a paper birch then. Doing something weird. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight we're talking to Gary Mee, like we do every third Wednesday, and we're talking about birch trees.
He doesn't wanna turn into some machine. Take a woman like you to get through the man in me.
Just tuning in to listen to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight, we're talking to Gary Mead, like we do every third Wednesday, and tonight's topic is birch trees.
Well, if you cut birch in February,
yeah,
and you want to use them for and have the bark stay on, you can cut them in February and dry them, and the bark will shrink with the wood. and it stays on. And well, I did this as an experiment 25, maybe 30 years ago, because I heard it was possible, and you know, I cut a couple of white birch off the bank by the mill, and I used them for poles for, you know, actually a closet. It's a closet without walls, and I just used the white birch poles to hang the, you know, the curtain, the rod on to hang the clothes up, and I just left it open. You know, I don't like too many walls and all that, but anyway, in 30 years, I mean, that bark's still on that just as like a day that I cut it. But if you cut it in the summertime or any other time, the bark will peel off. And I mean, hickory is probably one of the best ones cut in the winter, and the bark stays on because for some reason when the any other tree, actually hemlock will, if you cut in the winter time, the bark will stay on it, but not all the time. Cherry, I don't care what time of year you cut that, the bark is not staying on cherry, and maple either. Unless a sapling, you might get away with it. But once it gets into maturity and you get that furrowed bark, that's not staying on. But
You say that. Yeah, even there's a difference, right, I think, between red and sugar maple even. Sugar maple doesn't seem to come off.
No.
Right. But red does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it always slips off.
That's what my wood pile is. Jeez, I'd be taking out wheelbarrows of red maple bark afterwards.
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
I burn it.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it makes heat.
It does make heat.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's, you know, it just...
If it's going to come off and it's going to make a mess right then and there, I'll just take it off.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I burn a lot of bark. I think
I burn it in the pile in the back, not in the wood stove.
Right. Well, I throw mine in the wood stove at the mill. I don't do it, put it in my house.
Yeah.
But the one at the mill, I burn anything that burns in that thing. I just throw it in. It's a furnace, and I burn sawdust. Right now, I'm burning all my sawdust, and you know that spills when you're planing. You get the little bit, and you know I burn 2 5-gallon buckets of sawdust every day. You can't just pour sawdust in there. Boy, I learned a lesson with that one time. I was, you know. Hot embers in there, and I poured a whole bucket. Yeah, I usually pour half a bucket in at a time, but
yeah, you pour it on.
Well, it blew up, man.
Yeah,
the freaking door come open, sparks come out.
Really?
Because it just was like internal combustion, and boy, once that ignited.
When you threw in the sawdust?
Yeah, when I threw the sawdust in my wood stove.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You got the right air fuel mixture. It's just like, you know, a feedlot can explode too.
Wow.
The grain bins.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, when I put it in now, if I put a little too much in, I take the shovel and I open a hole so it gets air going through it. But, you know, the first time I learned my lesson good because, you know, I was out, I think I was running the rip saw, and you heard this. And the door flew open, sparks come flying out, and I go, "Holy mice, don't be doing that again." And I'm glad I was there.
You still got that big old stove in your shed at your house in Marksville? That big one in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah? How does that thing work?
I haven't started that since I closed the mill.
Oh,
I don't work in that shop
anymore.
That
thing's a beast.
That's the same one I have at the mill. That come out of the house up in New Kingston, out of the cellar.
It's basically like, is it an old coal wood?
It's an old coal wood furnace.
Like a big pot belly almost, it looks like.
Yeah. They're beautiful design. Yeah. They're all cast iron. And
they're intimidating.
They are.
It's like, damn, look at this thing.
But I heated my, you know, when I had the shop in Arkville, but I moved into the mill in 2019. Actually, 2020, I moved my shop down there.
Yeah, if anyone ever knows or sees or knows about a book on antique wood stoves, you know, I'd be interested. You can't find one. I haven't been able to.
Huh.
Because I'll be in the woods up on the forest preserve and find old wood stoves all the time.
Yeah.
Like pieces of cast iron And I'll look online, and they look familiar, so you can kind of say, oh, it's probably the late to mid-1800s.
Yeah.
But, man, I can't find anything, you know?
Well, these were Wise Furnace Company made most of those.
Yeah.
I have, in the gallery, I have a Suburban, which I got out of Joe Christensen. That's the only Suburban I've ever seen. You know, I have, I think, four Wise and then one... But I collect them for some reason. I started collecting them.
They're beautiful.
They are. They're absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, some of them smoke a little bit. And there's this guy in Grahamsville. He's got to be in his 90s now. And you walk into his house, and it's like something out of a storybook. He's got heads everywhere mounted, and it's dark, and there's a haze of wood smoke. And you're like, you want to tell him, but I'm not going to tell a 90-year-old guy something.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell am I going to tell him?
That's probably not helpful.
He knows there's smoke. You want to be like, hey, did you know there's smoke in the house? Like, he's like, you know, no shit. But anyway, this got me thinking, like.
Wait, what kind of heads are we talking?
Oh, big bucks. Oh. All sorts of animals. Yeah. It's really cool, you know? But it's beautiful stove, right? Mm-hmm. And people lived with these things for a long time. Meanwhile, as a tangent here, while we're on a tangent, I go to the American Lung Association. We're going back and forth on emails right now. The American Lung Association says there's no safe amount of wood smoke. I'm like, no safe amount? Have you seen this guy in Grahamsville?
He's 90.
Yeah. He's like breathing in smoke every day of his life. But anyway, so you could say that, well, that's anecdotal. Sure, I understand that. But yeah. No safe amount? Like, how do humans survive? You know, isn't that why we're the hairless ape? Because we, like, grew up around fire? I don't know.
Well, they're trying to eliminate wood burning.
No safe amount.
There's no safe amount.
This is not done.
Oh, we have to run everything electric now.
Well, it might happen. Because, you know, now we're on a tangent even more. Like, you know, New York State, what, they outlaw propane and gas on new stoves. And I remember people were freaking out years ago before they did this about taking away our wood stoves.
Yeah.
Well, now we're all set up to take them away, because they're definitely dirtier than gas stoves.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend that a wood stove is cleaner than a gas cook stove.
Right.
I'm just not going to pretend that.
Ideas, right?
So, no, but you better get ready, John.
They're
come and take it.
Come and take it. Well, I can't lift hands. It. You can't lift it anyway. They are heavy.
Yeah, I know. I just put mine in 2 years ago. It's heavy.
Yeah. I mean, when I ran the mill, that one in the mill, my brother eats a... Mitch is kind of a pyro with wood, too. He loves hot fires and all that. And
yeah, most humans
I come in from outside, and that stove was... So the whole thing, the cast iron was so red you could forge it.
Uh-oh.
And you could actually see, and I go...
They screwed up.
That's just how they ran it in there.
And Jesus.
And it was kiln-dried wood. And, you know, they pour it in, it was like a... Turned it into a forge.
Sure, is this your house?
So
is there some drinking going on, Gary?
This was at the mill.
Oh.
But right. It was like weather like this week. But we used to have a lot of that, you know, 20 below zero and... And yeah. It held on for a long time. I mean, this week is mild compared to what what I've been used to navigating.
Like I said before on the show, I think 2010 or 2009 was the last really cold winter we had. Remember, we had 3 days in Arkville where it got below negative 25.
Yeah.
3 days in a row.
And
remember all the... water lines in Margaretville were freezing where they plowed because it would penetrate deeper where they took the snow off.
We had
so bun and cone froze and
that went down 7 feet.
7 feet.
Yep.
Seven feet.
You know what caused that?
What?
Salt.
Yeah.
When you make ice cream, you put salt in there to make it colder. And that,
oh, yeah.
The salt, when you clear it off and put salt on it, it drives the frost down.
Huh. That makes sense.
It makes it colder. Yeah.
Makes it colder than it would be.
Because anything where there was snow covered it. But, you know, the only places froze up, like the bank, and, you know, I mean, it looks like it's going to snow, and they throw salt all over the place now.
I know.
It's
like on the roads, man. You know, when it's nice and snow covered, you got full drive, decent tires, you drive over that stuff, then they put the salt down.
Oh, and it sticks to your truck and gets stuck in your wheel wells.
Now that
God.
Should be illegal.
That should be illegal.
Salt.
All right, yep. Let's take that off the market.
All right. But, well,
now, kiln drying birch is relatively, it doesn't, I mean, the ends will check if you try to dry it too fast. It's one of the easiest woods to dry.
Hmm.
And, you know, birch, actually black birch, yellow birch isn't, I don't think it's as hard of a wood or as heavy. Black birch is a little heavier, got a little more beefiness to it. But the cross grain strength on that stuff is amazing. You know, it doesn't, you know, break on the cross strength. You know, some woods, you know, hard maple, soft maple, birches have a higher tolerance to pressure on the cross grain than, you know, the maple. The maples, soft maple actually is, and hard maple are, they're not too far apart. Because, you know, I did this whole research on cross grain strength, and what they do is they take a piston, and they mount it above this wood, and they take two blocks, and they take like a 1x1, a 2x2, and, you know, maybe a foot apart, and then they put pressure on it, and it reads how much pressure before it actually breaks.
Hmm.
They do it green, they do it dry. It'll crack a lot faster when it's dry than when it's green. And because of, you know, but, you know, the cross grain strength on birch, I mean, birch actually bends really nice. I mean, you can, you know, steam that up or, you know, cut it green. A lot of, back in the olden days, they used to, you know, saw the wood, and right after they sawed it, if they were going to make a sleigh run or something like that, they put it right in the mold and just clamp it down, just let it dry, and when it dries, it stays that way.
Amazing.
And, you know, a lot of stuff is soaked. I mean, the Indians soaked a lot of stuff. And
so what you should do, Gary, you should make sleds again.
Yeah,
you can't find a good sled out there. They're all pieces
of garbage.
Well, there's
no snow.
But they are. Sleds have gone downhill, man. I tried to get a sled for my kids. They are garbage.
Oh.
Garbage.
At least we had plastic.
At least we had decent plastic ones, though, back when I was
kidding. Well, they didn't break.
They're really bad now.
Well, they crack.
They crack immediately.
When you hit something, they crack.
So you should make some nice wooden sleds and charge $1,000 for them or something.
Go buy
some. People buy them.
Well, we had a toboggan.
What?
I was going to say, go buy inner tubes.
We had a toboggan that was actually made
like
out of...
a tractor
of,
one. That's what we did.
Yeah.
We had a seven-man toboggan that was made out of birch. And, you know, the whole... And we used to... Well, from the top of the hill on our farm, we'd start up there because Dad would take us up on the wagon, all the kids, and load us on this thing. We went a mile or 2.25 miles without stopping.
Damn.
And, you know, we come down, and once we broke the trail, and we stayed in the trail, and, you know, my oldest sister was in the front steering, and she messed up, so I put my my brother up front, my older brother Wayne. I made Maureen sit in the back, because you could steer from the back, too, but... She got too scared too fast, and, you know, she sent us into a stone wall one time. So that's it. You're not.
You're fired. But,
you know, the birch, it took that hit, and it didn't break.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
There you go, but birch sleds.
We'd go all the way down to the stream from the top of the mountain.
That's cool.
That was amazing.
I haven't seen a kid on a toboggan in decades. So, Gary, we're running out of time here. You say you got something to read?
Yeah, I... figured with this cold the way it is, we went, I was a Boy Scout leader for quite a few years. This was one camporee we went on. It was, this is called Keeper of the Flame. This was 127.02. I wrote this at 3 a.m. And we were all camped out in a canvas tent. And it was 20, 25 below zero outside. Who was going to be there for the Keeper of the Flame? Lark. Chunks of wood fuel the fire again and again. Everyone seems restless as the hot coals reduce to ashes, and everyone unknowingly just thrashes and thrashes. I got out of my sleeping bag to put small sticks on the hot coals. Warmed up, everyone again is calm and back dreaming about their goals. Earlier, they had plenty of fun sleigh riding down that steep hill. We leaders teach these boys about survival of the fittest, and they realize in some instances it's whoever is quickest. The foundation of a boy shows from what he has learned. If they play foolishly with fire, they will surely get burned. And everyone has to mess with fire in one way or another, and many times we end up reaching out for our sister or brother for comfort and good conversation, sometimes until two. As the boys lay in bed, I can see how much in one day they grew. Heavy green canvases over the top of our heads, the fire now burning brightly, the boys all cozy in their beds. On the other side of this canvas tent in the wilderness here, it's 20 below zero, and that's quite severe. Our beds are just canvas cots stacked three high, and off in the distance, I can hear the coy dogs cry. I wonder what they are crying for on this bitter cold winter's night. They are not crying at all, but rejoicing at the passing of daylight. Stalking in the bitter night air beneath the full moon, there is a lesson to be learned from this, and it will come to me soon. The beast of the night shows us survival of the fittest time after time. Just watch what they do, son. They have committed no crime. The fuel in our lantern must be getting real low. The light above my head is losing its bright glow. Sitting here on the edge of my cooler, plywood beneath my feet. It's 3:30 in the morning, and I must get some sleep. I guess I will put another log on the fire. That is all I can take. My body saying it's time to retire. Good night or good morning, what do I say? Up through the night and into the very next day. Just a few hours of sleep is all I need. And going to go to sleep now in hopes of good dreams. And that's my poem for tonight. And I think I have an idea, which I'm going to go over with Ryan for next month. And actually, my idea should take several months to put into motion. But, you know, we'll see.
All right.
I'll discuss it with Ryan, and yay or nay. And
all right, Gary.
Happy New Year, everybody, and peace.
Yep, see you next week. Next week we have Ben Falk from Vermont talking about wood burning. So there you go. Have a good night.
Uh-oh.
Good night.
And he wondered how it happened that he ended up this way. Getting lost.
WIOX is supported by you and the following underwriters. The Four County Library System and Bookmobile, the library on wheels that visits communities in Broome, Shenango, Delaware, and Otsego counties with all kinds of books, fiction, nonfiction, children's, even large print audiobooks and DVDs. Requests for specific books, authors, or topics, library cards, and the Bookmobile schedule at 4cls.org. The number 4cls.org. Or 607-723-8236. The Slighter Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency, educating consumers about insurance decisions after a life-changing event, such as a marriage, divorce, death, a job-related change in benefits, and about coverage options. Open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5. More information at 845-586-2641 or slighteragency.com. The Catskill Mountain Foundation, celebrating decades of arts on the mountaintop with countless performances, classes, and community events each year. From Grammy Award-winning musical performances to dance and art classes for all ages, including a stage version of the cult movie classic, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Dates, times, and ticket info at CatskillMTN.com. WIOX Roxbury is supported by you and a really easy easy way to support WIOX is to donate your car or truck, one that you don't need anymore. You know, the one sitting out in the backfield or off the side of your driveway. We'll get the old clunker out of the way at no cost to you, but it could be worth hundreds of dollars to support WIOX. Learn more about WIOX vehicle donations at WIOXradio.org. Beep, 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 beep. Thank you.